That's rough.
This is a poem that was written by Max Ehrman in the 1920s called Desiderata, meaning the things that are desired. It's been around a while, so it's likely many of you are familiar with it. Settle in comfortably, and you may either read it or just listen. See if you can find something new for you today. Go placidly amid the noise and the haste, and remember what peace there may be in silence. As far as possible, without surrender, be on good terms with all persons. Speak your truth quietly and clearly, and listen to others, even to the dull and the ignorant. They too have their story. Avoid loud and aggressive persons. They are vexatious to the spirit. If you compare yourself with others, you may become vain or bitter, for always there will be greater and lesser persons than yourself. Enjoy your achievements as well as your plans. Keep interested in your own career, however humble. It is a real possession in the changing fortunes of time. Exercise caution in your business affairs, for the world is full of trickery. But let this not blind you to what virtue there is. Many persons strive for high ideals, and everywhere life is full of heroism. Be yourself. Especially, do not feign affection. Neither be cynical about love. For in the face of all aridity and disenchantment, it is as perennial as the grass. Take kindly the counsel of the years, gracefully surrendering the things of youth. Nurture strength of spirit to shield you in sudden misfortune, but do not distress yourself with dark imaginings. Many fears are born of fatigue and loneliness. Beyond a wholesome discipline, be gentle with yourself. You are a child of the universe, no less than the trees and the stars. You have a right to be here. And whether or not it is clear to you, no doubt the universe is unfolding as it should. Therefore, be at peace with God, whatever you conceive God to be. And whatever your labors and aspirations in the noisy confusion of life, keep peace in your soul. With all its sham, drudgery, and broken dreams, it is still a beautiful world. Be cheerful. Strive to be happy.
A reading from Matthew chapter 5, verses 43 through 48 from the Inclusive Bible. You have heard it said, love your neighbor, but hate your enemy. But I tell you, love your enemies and pray for your persecutors. This will prove that you are children of God. For God makes the sun rise on the bad and the good alike. God's rain falls on the just and the unjust. If you love those who love you, what merit is there in that? Don't tax collectors do as much? And if you greet only your sisters and brothers, what is so praiseworthy about that? Don't Gentiles go as much? Therefore, be perfect, as Abba, Ima, God in heaven is perfect.
Yep. Oh, there we go. You don't want to see me try to hold the microphone and talk. It's not. I'll be like throwing it down there, and it's not good. Let's try that again. Kingdom versus kingdom. Three Sundays ago, when we kicked off this series on kingdom co-creators, when I told you that it wasn't a typo, that the G was missing on purpose, I began that Sunday by sharing a story with you of a bold risk that I took when I was just 15 years old. Traveling with a group of folks that were complete strangers to me until that week, I set out for 2 weeks on the island of Trinidad for a mission trip. And I was all fired up for Jesus, and I was ready to do my part that summer in telling people about God's love. I read that story of Jesus' call of disciples, the one we heard 3 weeks ago, a story I was taught a lot as a child. I heard that as a call to go out and fish for people. And so when I went to Trinidad, that's what I did. I fished for folks with just the right hook and the right bait that would persuade folks to profess belief in Jesus. I thought I was building the kingdom. With each trip, though, because I took a few more like that, and experiences in college and seminary that were to follow, I started to become unsettled about my understanding of Jesus, of what it meant to be a disciple, and of what the gospel was about at its core. But as some things about my beliefs began to unravel, I also now saw other threads that I hadn't noticed before. I struggled with the language and theology behind winning souls for Jesus that created and nurtured such an individualistic understanding of Christianity and relationship with God. While on the flip side, I saw the power of relationships built within the faith community, relationships with God and with one another, and how those loving relationships seemed to better model the very things that Jesus was often talking about. Shortly after Charles, my spouse, and I entered ministry many years ago, I accompanied him on our church's youth trip. I don't often go on youth trips, but I went that summer. And we joined together with two other youth groups. And one evening, the students were invited to write out on sticky notes what they thought the kingdom looked like. And then they posted those all over the wall. Later that night, I went back and began to look over this kind of sea of brightly colored post-it notes and discovered that there was a theme that ran through a lot of them. It was relationships. Many students had just written that one word out. And others had found ways to describe the kingdom in such a way that it was clear that they understood it about as being about loving relationships. Relationships with one another and with God. And staring at that colorful diversity of sticky notes, I was struck by the power of relationships and how loving, healthy relationships within the community reflect the values that Jesus embodied and taught us. We were building relationships that week. We are building relationships every week when we come together. And God is always desiring a deeper relationship with us. And that moment, staring at all those colorful sticky notes, was when kingdom clicked for me. When it stopped being kingdom. It had never fully settled until that moment as I traced my own story from those early summers as a missionary, winning hearts for the kingdom, to my post-seminary days, watching people of faith building relationships built on love and compassion and gentleness and understanding and grace and affirmation. They were building the kingdom as Jesus taught us to. And I could see Jesus embodied in those relationships. While kingdom allows us to live our individualistic lives of faith, kingdom requires that threads of connectivity be woven between us. There is not a kingdom without you and I together. Kingdom speaks not just to our personal lives, but to the community, to creation, to all of God's beloved children living together in harmony. And suddenly, kingdom made a lot more sense. Of course, it did not take long for me, serving in a church, to realize that just as much as we can sometimes succeed in building those kingdom relationships that are grounded in love, we often do a pretty bad job of it as well in the church. Whether in the pews or out beyond in the greater world, we often struggle to embody the teachings of Jesus that we so boldly proclaim on Sunday morning. And why wouldn't we? I mean, we are people, and we are not perfect, and we can be quite messy some days, if not all days. Our views, our beliefs, our personalities, so unique, and so they rub up against each other, and they leave us sometimes not looking so fondly upon our neighbors. We still claim in word that we love our neighbors. We even say we love our enemies, as Jesus taught us, maybe the villains too. But when it comes right down to it, we carry irritation and disgust and resentment and anger. We are often divided and polarized. For the last few weeks, we've been talking about creating the kingdom. But part of creating it is also living in it. It is not a fancy hotel that we check into and suddenly all is well because we each have our individualized rooms with our key card. Creating the kingdom, sustaining the kingdom, requires that we embody the social ethic that Jesus puts before us, that we be the social ethic we learn from Jesus. An ethic that finds its roots in one clear commandment, which Jesus says is greater than all commandments. What? To love our neighbors as ourselves, right? So let's think about this passage of Jesus' Sermon on the Mount through that lens, through a kingdom lens, a communal lens. To do that, it requires some undoing of how we've approached and heard it before. And I know we're pretty familiar with undoing how we've been taught something here at Crossroads. You heard the inclusive version before to help break you from how you're used to hearing it. Because when you've heard this part of the Sermon on the Mount, what you've heard is you have heard it said, but I say to you. Does that sound a little more familiar? Now, we only read the opening and closing sections of this passage, but in that space in between, there are several more renditions of, you have heard it said, don't do this, da-da-da-da-da, but I say to you, also don't do this, da-da-da-da-da. Now, we're accustomed to hearing this passage as Jesus contradicting or correcting the laws of the Old Testament. We've heard Jesus intensifying them, and the church has often taught these as rules that we are supposed to live by to keep ourselves from sinning. As in, the Ten Commandments may tell you to not murder, but I'm telling you to not even be angry with someone because that too is a sin. Can you honestly tell me that Jesus never got angry? There seems to be a time when he flipped some tables over. Or there was that time he got really mad at the Pharisees because they were upset that he chose to heal somebody on the Sabbath. And it says he was angry. Anger was not an emotion that Jesus was immune to. So how then do we read this passage if anger is a reality in our lives? We've always read it through this individualistic lens as rules to live by. So we would not sin and we would stay in good favor with God. so that we would ensure our own personal salvation. But what if we should have been reading it? What if we should have been listening to Jesus through a broader communal lens? Jesus rarely focused on the letter of the law. In fact, he was often found reinterpreting the rigid law in order to heal and include others. Instead of admonishing us as individuals, maybe what Jesus is doing here is offering us a picture of what the kingdom will look like, what God desires it to look like. Maybe it's not about the rigid laws that we interpret, but the spirit behind them. The disposition of our hearts that nurtures a community grounded in goodness and kindness. Let me say more about that. I think what we see here is that God takes the kingdom seriously. That God takes relationships and living in community seriously. That God cares about how we treat one another. God cares that we uphold one another's dignity, and sometimes we're hard-pressed to see past our anger or dislike of someone to think them worthy of our respect. God desires for us to be more than just civil to one another, or than to just be holding to the most basic laws of morality. Embedded within these, "you have heard it said, but I say to you" lines, Jesus is saying, the kingdom is about more than just following a set of rules. It's about living in relationship with one another, and the nature of those relationships is important. It's more than tolerance or civility. Jesus is speaking to a relationality that upholds the dignity of every person, that espouses love and grace and generosity of heart to each person, even those that might not fit the category of enemy in our lives, and the ones that might fit a category. Jesus is saying that to create the kingdom, to actually live in it and to sustain it, we have got to actually treat one another well. We've got to speak to one another well. We've got to seek goodness for all of creation. This is what the beloved community will look like. Debbie Thomas writes, "Christianity is not a rule book for my private morality. It is a deeply incarnational, relational way of life that affects every single human being I engage in." Jesus says, "You have heard it said not to murder, but I say to you, not to hold anger against a sister or brother. Go and reconcile with them before you come to worship." We all grow angry, and anger can even help empower us to action at times. But when we harbor anger in our hearts, when it becomes a part of our spirits, when we hold it towards one another, it can draw us away from the values of kingdom living. It can draw us away from seeing one another through God's eyes and understanding how God sees us as well. It infects and harms the spirits of our relationships, the spirits of others as well as ourselves, and the spirit of the community as a whole. Jesus is calling forth a kingdom in which relationships are life-giving. And anger and hatred and grudge holding and disregard of another person's dignity, those things are not life-giving in the community. The disposition of our hearts toward one another is key when it comes to kingdom creating. But here's the thing. Jesus doesn't limit our kingdom work to the close, intimate circles where we feel most at home. He doesn't speak of only loving the folks we like. One of the things that has been unique about my time at Crossroads is that we really deeply value our relationships with one another in a way that I haven't always seen in communities of faith. Even in moments when we disagree, when our different views of faith and life don't coincide, even when we just rub each other the wrong way, we still try to hold one another with love and grace. We still lift up the value of our relationships and the dignity of the other person over what we might be feeling in that moment. We seek to work out the bumps in our relationships and in the life of the community rather than just chucking one another to the side or sitting on the opposite side of the church. Mind you, we don't always do it perfectly. And it takes time. Sometimes years, I would imagine, even for some of us. But I see us trying again and again to do that. Because our relationships are more important to us. And each time I see this happening, I feel like I'm watching a television show or something. It's kind of hard to realize that it's happening in front of me. And I'm amazed at folks' ability to be humble and to let go of themselves sometimes and to still see that other person as their neighbor and as their friend and as God's beloved. And it's a remarkable thing to do. It's kingdom creating. But it's also easier to do so in spaces such as these, where folks, for the most part, generally think like we do, and where we've worked really hard to create this sense of sanctuary for one another. But what about beyond this circle? What about loving beyond our pew neighbor? What about loving our enemies or the villains we see in the world? You have heard that it was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. Do we embody this teaching beyond these walls that we so boldly proclaim when we're within them? In our world that is so divided, so polarized, so anger-inducing at times, how hard do we try? Some of us come here on Sunday mornings to escape those feelings during the week. We desire for the world, for all of creation, to live as the kingdom, where every person is valued and affirmed, is shown dignity and respect, is treated with grace and love and justice. But how can we ask that of the world if we are not willing to embody, to be the life and blood of that ethic in the world ourselves, if we aren't willing to even just try? The kingdom will only flourish if we work to create it, not just within these walls, but beyond them. And Jesus is asking us to look at the disposition of our hearts and to consider how we regard and treat one another. So when we encounter someone at work who disagrees with us, or we get into a heated debate on social media about our differing political views, which none of you do, I'm sure, or we have a family member who won't accept us for who we are, or who just sees life so differently than we do, how will we respond? Will we be gracious? Will we be loving? Will we seek to treat one another with dignity? Even when we disagree, even when we see the world differently, we can still value one another as human beings and treat one another so. We can still lift one another up as made in the image of God, as having traces of the Creator upon us, like we sang earlier. We can still treat and speak to one another with the same loving kindness that God extends to us. Because if we don't try for that, how can we ever expect the kingdom, the greater kingdom, beyond these church walls to actually reflect it? It begins with us, with God's incarnational love embodied within us and lived out in the way that we treat one another, our neighbors, our enemies, and anyone who falls in between those two categories. We don't just get to live in the kingdom, although that's what I always thought growing up. I made my profession of faith and I got my ticket. We don't get to just live in the kingdom. We have to help create it. We have to nurture it. We have to be it. So go be it. Amen. I'm going to let you be seated for just a moment because there's several things in the community coming up, and I don't think I gave any announcements last week, so I just want to make sure you, I know, I gave you a week off, to know the ways that you can be tied into the community coming up. Of course, this coming weekend, Young Adult Night is Friday night. Let me know if you're coming because we're at a restaurant at Waldo Pizza. And the preschool training is this weekend, so please hold our preschool training folks in prayer as they go, and the others that will be joining us will be at Overland Park Christian Church, getting trained in the curriculum that they use downstairs. And if you still want to send some food or help pay for trainings, you can talk to Beth about that. But we have five folks that are getting an excellent training to be certified storytellers for our preschool class, and we're thrilled that they're doing that. Next Sunday, there's a couple things going on. One is that you get to eat pancakes, because it's hard to believe, but the following Wednesday is Ash Wednesday. We kick off Lent, and you know, Tuesday is often called Mardi Gras Tuesday or Fat Tuesday, and people eat pancakes, so we thought, well, we'll eat pancakes on Sunday when we're together. So come next Tuesday at 9:15 for pancakes and sausage. It is a fundraiser for Colorado trip to help pay for different costs that come along with that. There'll be a group of folks down there running it who are going to Colorado. The adult classes will not meet during the Sunday school hour, as I understand it. The children and youth will still meet, but their leaders will let you know, like, they can go eat and then they come in, or they come into class and then they go eat. They'll talk to you if you have a child or a youth and let you know the plan so that they can still eat pancakes as well. But bring cash to donate to that and help raise money for Colorado and come eat yummy pancakes together. Downstairs will serve from 9:15 to 10:15 so that you can maybe make it up here by 10:30. Mm-hmm. The worship team hopes. As we always do. Also next Sunday is we have a special treat for you. I am not preaching. That's your special treat. I will be here, though. In addition to yummy, syrupy pancakes, Kristen Wooldridge will be preaching. So some of you have Baptist roots. I have Baptist roots, and the Baptist Women in Ministry many years ago started recognizing February as Women in Ministry Month. It's called Martha Stearns Marshall Month, and she was a Baptist female preacher in the 1800s. And so they honor her, and all over the nation, pulpits open up for women in ministry to preach, and they really reach out to women who may not have a pulpit to speak in regularly because there are a lot of pulpits closed to women. So we're going to let you hear another woman's voice. Kristen Wooldridge will be here. You might remember her from 3 years ago. She preached when I was out on family leave when the twins were born, and some of our folks who have Liberty ties know Kristen well. She's a Central Seminary grad, and she works at William Jewell College and raises her kids, but is a wonderful preacher, and we're thrilled to have her, so you'll get to hear her preach. The only other thing I'm going to tell you, the big thing I want to make you note of is Lent really is starting in a week and a half. On February 26th, which is a Wednesday. And so last year you might recall that we kind of embarked on something new, and we partnered with Broadway Church and Trinity United Methodist Church for our Ash Wednesday and our Holy Week services. And we got good responses from all three congregations and decided to do that again this year as a way to gather as a larger community and worship together. So in your bulletin there are details about which church is hosting each of those. But I want to make sure you're aware so that you know that we're not hosting till the last one. We're hosting Good Friday. So Ash Wednesday will be at Broadway, and they actually have a new building that they bought on Jarbo. And then Maundy Thursday will be at Trinity United Methodist Church. And so you can look in your bulletin for those details. We'll be promoting them a lot. But just know that in case you're not here next Sunday, our Ash Wednesday service is not in this building. It's at Broadway, and the address is in your bulletin. So I hope that you'll join us for one or all of those services. It was really life-giving last year to gather with other folks across Kansas City to share in word and song and prayer and just be the kingdom, really, beyond our walls with other folks. So I hope you can be a part of that. Let's pray as we go out today. God, you invite us into the kingdom, but not just to take up residency. To help create it with you, to welcome others, to invite them in, to build relationships with one another that are rooted in love, that extend grace, that seek goodness, that are able to see past our different perspectives, and the ways that we might rub up against each other, to reach past those things and to see the beauty and the diverse ways that you have created us and the diverse views that we have at seeing the world, which together create a much richer view. Help us to hold one another with grace and love, to build those relationships beyond these walls, to build the kingdom as we desire it to be. May we help create it and sustain it. May we be it as we go from this place. Amen. Go in peace.